All right, then. Welcome to another edition of American Hit Radio, the Friday edition, which is how music changed. I'm your host, Tom Ryan. With me, my lovely wife and co-host, Heidi Morales Ryan. As you may know, this show is the third installment of our series on the Pink Floyd shows that we've been doing. And what we're going to do today is actually play a previously aired show. I actually think that it's about 10 years old, maybe even more, that we recorded on our Wednesday series, because it makes chronological sense to include it now as we are discussing Pink Floyd in around 1967. And this is dedicated to the album Piper at Gates of Dawn. So rather than be redundant by rehashing what went on with the recording of this album, we'll let the previously recorded show do the heavy lifting for us today. So here it is. Enjoy. If your introduction to Pink Floyd and the extent of your knowledge of the group extends from Dark Side of the Moon to The Wall, then you are in for one heck of a surprise. If you were thoroughly indoctrinated into the latter-day, self-absorbed, megalomaniacal visions of Roger Waters, you will likely be stupefied by the band's earlier work. Granted, the Syd Barrett era did not last long. One album, actually, although he was a ghost-like presence on Saucerful of Secrets, the group's second release. It is incredible, then, to consider that the entire legacy of Syd Barrett pre-Meltdown is based on a handful of singles and this one record, Pink Floyd's debut album. In such a short amount of time, Syd Barrett managed to become the single greatest proponent for taking acid. Then, just as fast, he became the single most important proponent for not taking acid. This album captures Barrett just before the meltdown, at the height of his playful acid vision fantasies. Better than anyone before or since, Barrett brilliantly combined both sides of the psychedelic coin, the fear and mystery of the unknown on one side with fascination and childlike whimsy on the other. Word on the street was that the band did not get a particularly lucrative deal from EMI upon signing, but the advantages were enormous. Primarily, the label was completely confounded by their new wards, so they imposed no artistic control whatsoever. Even better, it meant that Pink Floyd could record at Abbey Road Studios, a place that knew a thing or two about making great-sounding records. Sessions for Piper at the Gates of Dawn were interwoven with Beatles sessions for Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. You should know that the American and British versions of this album each delete one absolutely integral track from the finished product. See Emily Play may qualify as the best acid-inspired 45 RPM single of all time, followed closely by Barrett's other non-LP masterpiece, Arnold Lane. But the English music business was so averse to including singles on albums that it is sorely missed on the British release. In America, however, they did make room for See Emily Play, but they did so by removing Bike, the most amusing masterpiece of Syd Barrett's career. It's a tough choice, but easily resolved in this digital age. The album that I've got here to play is the English version. Hopefully we'll have time to add on the single at the end. So here, then, is Piper at the Gates of Dawn as it opened from August of 1967. We'll be right back.
siam cat. Always sitting by your side, always by your side. That cat's something I can't explain.
Something that I think a lot of people would associate with the Pink Floyd that became incredibly super huge, the monster band that they eventually did become.
Right, the arena rock band.
Yeah, but back then it was a very different thing. It was a band that really the label didn't quite know what to do with. And even the people that were handling the band were very much at odds with how to approach them. I mean, the tabloid pretty much had them down to some extent. I mean, this is a band that basically when they play live, they played songs like the first track that we just played, which was called Astronomy Domine. They would stretch out on that and play it for, you know, 10, 20 minutes at a time. Another song, Interstellar Overdrive, similar in title, which were just very, you know, not easy, but they were improvisatory songs where the band would be able to just stretch out and move. But when they got into the studio, Barrett would more or less let his playful side take over, and he would let songs come out that he was almost making them up in the studio in a lot of ways. That last song we just heard called Lucifer Sam, like you call it, Heidi, what did you say, like a surf spy song or something?
Yeah, psychedelic surf spy song.
Yeah, it's a cool way to look at it. Something that is floating all over the place, time signature, everything is like made to like be built around the cadence of Sid's vocal line and his lyric. It'll happen a number of times on the album as you listen. The press had it down, said that the tabloid pretty much said that they were making music for LSD users, but the label was uncomfortable with that. So the label released a statement saying, quote, "The Pink Floyd does not know what people mean by psychedelic pop and are not trying to create hallucinatory effects on their audiences." I think that's a major cop-out.
That was an understatement.
Let's hear a couple more tracks to see who might be right in that argument. First track up is called Matilda Mother, a song credited to Sid Barrett and to keyboard player Richard Wright, while the next track, Flaming, is exclusively Barrett's composition.
Majesty.
to leave me there, hanging in my inventory, waiting. You only have to read the lines of Scribbly Black and everything shines.
Across the stream with wooden shoes, bells to tell the king the news, a thousand misty riders climb up higher once upon a time, wondering and dreaming, the words had different meanings.
I love that song.
Me too. It's just, you know, yippee. You can't see me.
But I can you.
That's a Syd Barrett composition called Flaming.
And for those that don't know what an eiderdown is, it's a comforter.
There you go. We're playing the entire album entitled Piper at the Gates of Dawn by Pink Floyd, their debut album, an album that bears very little resemblance to the rest of their catalog, especially the later day catalog, post-70, 1970 catalog. In 1967, they were a very different band. When they met, everybody in the band was an architecture student, Roger Waters, Nick Mason, and Richard Wright, with the exception of Syd, who, of course, was an art student. Look out for those art students. They're always trouble.
Those wacky doodle.
And it was Syd, of course, who was the only real drug user in the band. But he was also by far the most important songwriter in the band, who had brought the band into a direction that, number one, reflected his mindset, and two, reflected his art school leanings. And the rest of the band was more than happy to go along because in 1967, this was making perfectly good sense. The producer, Norman Smith, said that the sessions for the album went pretty well, except as they went on, they began to get weirder and weirder. He eventually found that with Syd, it was very difficult to maintain any sort of a relationship or a conversation with him, as he normally seemed almost catatonic if you spoke to him. And it didn't help that his LSD intake began to escalate as the album recording sessions progressed, making them get weirder and weirder. Here's an example. This next track is one of the later songs that were recorded. Definitely one of the weirder songs on the album. Not exactly sure how to even pronounce its name. It looks like it's called Pow R Tok H. We'll follow that up with a track written by Roger Waters, the only song not credited in some way to Syd. Thank you. Roger Waters could get pretty psychedelic himself there.
The struggle is real.
It's called Take Up Thy Stethoscope and Walk. Before that, as I said, it's straight power talk eicher, so H or some such thing. To give an idea of how the sessions were going, I mean, they recorded that song, Take Up Thy Stethoscope and Walk, on March 20th. Got it done in a day. The next day, on March 21st, they were invited to watch the Beatles on the Sgt. Pepper sessions, and they watched them lay down Lovely Rita, Meter Maid. Then they went back to work to record a song that's on side two of the album called The Scarecrow. Things were actually coming together relatively well for the band, but the problem was, as the sessions progressed, Barrett was like looking more and more visibly debilitated. Uh-oh. And becoming less and less communicative as the sessions wore on. Here's the, I guess you could say, the centerpiece of their live shows. Took up the majority of the space on side two of the album. At almost 10 minutes long, here is Interstellar Overdrive. We'll be right back. Interstellar Overdrive, a track that I've got. I'm of two minds on that track.
Just like they want you to be.
Probably. I mean, when I played that at home, you know, in preparation for the show, and when they have that part where the sound just starts to spin around in your head on the speakers and a stereo thing and fading out, it's just like, it's so freaky psychedelic. It's really kind of fun. But the song itself is also really trying, and I think it can be very off-putting. Like right now, I'm thinking like it's probably possible that a lot of people would tune out hearing that, thinking that it's too weird. 10 minutes of just total weirdness. And what's even weirder is when the album came out in America, they made that the lead-off track.
Oh, wow.
You know, so it basically, it's like saying, like,
they're,
you know,
pushing the envelope.
Good luck getting past this. You know, it's just not the right place for it to be side one, track one, I don't think, in my opinion. And in this instance, it's doubly bad because where it appears, I mean, every song after this is now a Syd Barrett solo song, and they are all so remarkably, like, charming. They're just great songs. But you'd have to get through that to get to that point. So let's just play some of this. I mean, because this is like basically, while this is going on, it's really, this is interesting because this is what was happening in Syd Barrett's life. Their manager, before a gig, basically came in and said, I found him in the dressing room and he was so just gone. Roger Waters and I got him on his feet and we got him out to the stage. And of course, the audience went spare because they loved him. The band started to play and Syd just stood there. He had his guitar around his neck and his arms just dangled.
Oh my.
At his sides.
Nice.
It's just sad. We'll have more stories about that, but let's play two of the tracks. I mean, that I think that display some of the incredible charm of Syd Barrett's writing. We'll start with The Gnome. We'll go into chapter 24.
I want to tell you a story about a little man, if I can. A gnome named Grimble Crumble, and little gnomes stay in their homes, eating, sleeping, drinking their wine. He wore a scarlet tunic, a blue-green hood. It looked quite good. He had a big adventure amidst the grass, fresh air at last. Whining, dining, biding his time. And then one day, hooray, another way for gnomes to say. Isn't it good? Look at the sky, look at the river. Isn't it good? Winding, finding places to go. And then one day, accomplished in six stages, and the seventh brings return. The seven is the number of the young light. It forms when darkness is increased by one. Change, return, success, going and coming without error. Action brings good fortune, sunset. The time is
Sid Barrett's solo compositions there, Chapter 24 and The Gnome. No doubt in my mind, I feel that the best work that Sid did is when they left him alone, when they didn't try to basically force it into a psychedelic box where the band could jam and go crazy. Right. The more normal he tried to be, the more entertaining he was, because he was anything but normal. No doubt. Let's play one more before I can summarize, because I'm saving the best two for last. But here's one more of those oddly charming songs from Sid that appear at the end of the album. This is called The Scarecrow.
Scarecrow, as everyone knows, stood with a bird on his hat and straw everywhere. He didn't care. He stood in a field where barley grows. His head did no thinking, his arms didn't move, except when the wind cut up off and mice ran around on the ground. He stood in a field where barley grows. The black and green scarecrow was sadder than me, but now he's resigned to his fate. His guy's not unkind, he doesn't mind. He stood in a field where barley.
a very English but very charming, obviously drug-induced, you know, tunes, but remarkable and fascinating. They were scheduled to play at the National Jazz and Blues Festival in England, but Barrett's condition made that all virtually impossible.
Oh, no.
They had to release a statement to the press saying that he was suffering from nervous exhaustion, and they begged him to see a psychiatrist, which he never did do. And they next were scheduled to come to America for a tour of America. It started out bad because they came here and they were here for a couple of weeks and they never got their work visas.
Oh, dear.
So they sat around for too long. And by the time they were supposed to play, they actually went to Winterland in San Francisco to play. They were coming on after Janis Joplin was supposed to perform. And Sid walks out on stage. And as he's standing there, as they're performing, he starts to detune his guitar. And he turns all the pegs until all the strings fall right off of his guitar. During the show, they then end up, I don't know how this possibly could have happened, on the Pat Boone Show.
Oh boy.
Of all places, the Pat Boone Show. Wow. Pink Floyd. And they have to rehearse, so rehearsal was fantastic. They picked the song, they all played it. Sid did the lip syncing, was fantastic. Time came to actually do the filming for the live television. Sid just stood there and stared at the camera, didn't move his lips for the entire show.
Wow.
The band literally said that this is over. They were done. They packed up. They sent them home on the next flight. And that was essentially the end of Sid Barrett's professional career.
Oops.
Just like that. But I saved the best for last, what I consider to be the two best psychedelic songs of all time. One of them on the English album, one of them on the American album. This one is from the English album. I think there's very few songs in the history of psychedelic music that are any funnier, wiser, or wittier. I can't play this song enough. Probably my favorite Pink Floyd song. It's called Bike.
I've got a bike, you can ride it if you like. It's got a basket, a bell, and rims and things to make it look good. I'd give it to you if I could, but I borrowed it. You're the kind of girl that fits in with my world. I'll give you anything, everything, you want things.
The album ends on a bed of very strange clock sounds, random noises, and eventually what sounds like a really crazy animated character. It's an odd ending to a very, very, very odd album. But an album that now stands as probably one of the single most important psychedelic albums ever recorded. Certainly a signpost at being one of the most experimental of its time. I mean, 13th Floor Elevators had them beaten in terms of... There's that crazy animated thing I'm talking about. But this album goes down. It usually makes an awful lot of people's like best albums of all time lists. And songs like Bike, I think, in particular, that just stand out so much. Now, I got one left to play. It was the song that basically appeared on the American album, was a hit single. Probably, if Bike was my favorite psychedelic song, this would, I would say, qualifies as by far my favorite psychedelic single. This is masterpiece. Hope you enjoyed the show, everybody. Enjoy the song. Here's Pink Floyd with See Emily Play.
Emily tries but misunderstands. She's often inclined to borrow somebody's dreams till tomorrow. There is no other day. Let's try it another way. You'll lose your mind and play. Free games will play. See Emily play. Soon after dark, Emily cries. Gazing through trees in sorrow, hardly a sound till tomorrow. The ground. Float on the river.